Good morning, good afternoon, and good night, and welcome to the Amateur Otaku Podcast. How is everybody doing out there? I am Brandon Alvarado, the Scarlet Fan here, and I'm very excited to be back here hosting the Amateur Otaku Podcast, the pod where we talk about the animes that we love, hate, find entertaining, that is hot and busting with life out there, and those hidden gems that a lot of people don't know about or forgot about throughout the years, but that we want to bring forth because there's so much awesome stuff out there, and we talk it all at the Amateur Otaku Podcast. Thank you for joining us. We have a great episode for you guys. We're going to talk about a very, very, very crazy film by one of the legends of psychological and animation and Japanese animation, Satoshi Kon, the late Satoshi Kon. And of course, I am very excited to be here and talk about this with you guys. But of course, I never do it alone. I always have a great team of awesome friends that love anime as much as I do and that are willing to take the crazy rides with me. And those are none other than Doc Isaac and President Mike. What's up, guys?
Hey, y'all. Good morning. It's bright and early over here.
Isaac, you stuck in the dream world?
Something. Drinking water.
Something. Are you literally drinking water or just something drinking water?
Something drinking water or some yogurt. I don't know.
Okay, you know, it's a big.
Yeah, it's okay. So, welcome guys to the Amateur Otaku Podcast. If you love everything we do, make sure you hit that subscribe button on our YouTube channel, click that like button, and click the bell for notifications so you don't miss any videos that come out. Also, if you love to listen to our podcast, make sure to subscribe to our podcast channel. The Amateur Otaku Podcast is available everywhere, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's available on Radio Public, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are found. You can find the Amateur Otaku Podcast. Now, without further ado, guys, we're going to talk about a movie that it's an anime. It's considered an anime classic by one of the greats of Japanese anime movies and series, Satoshi Kon. He is of course the director behind Perfect Blue, the director behind Millennium Actress, I believe so, and he's also the director of the Great Tokyo Godfathers, with which me and Isaac have covered in the past, which is one of the best Christmas movies like of all time in my opinion. But this is a different movie because it's very popular, it's super nuts, and it also inspired some of the best sci-fi psychological films, thrillers that have come out in the last 10-15 years. There's a lot of this set the tone, or at least opened up a world to explore that I don't think has been explored in this way since this movie debuted. And that is Paprika. It is, of course, directed by Satoshi Kon, came out back in 2006, and it was, of course, produced by the one and only production company, Madhouse, which is why the animation is so amazing, beautiful, modernized. And Isaac, it's been a while since we've done a Madhouse project, because I remember there was a time where everything we did was Madhouse, and we didn't even notice it.
Or at least close to it, yeah.
Yeah, but it's been a while since we've done a Madhouse property, and I can't help but say, but even for a movie that's from 2006, yes, I watched like the HD digital version of it or whatever, but for being a movie from 2006, the animation, it's like so clean, so good, and like the little touches that they have of CGI to make it even cleaner don't take away from the great animation that it has. You guys understand what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't look, you know how some movies from like mid 2000s, early 2010s, kind of like overuse CGI because of course it was that transition, yeah, that it kind of lost a lot of its charm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, this movie doesn't do that. Like, the animation is on point, but it also uses CGI in a smart way, just to enhance it enough to not lose its artistry. Does that make sense?
Yeah, the movie's gorgeous. Like, yeah. every frame is literally a painting. Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, you could just hang it on a wall. That's how gorgeous this movie is.
And it's not stilted. It's so fluid.
Right.
And all the expressions, all the environments. You know how sometimes you have the mixture of a still image with a moving image, especially animation, is very normal for you to see that whatever's moving is moving, but whatever's static in the background feels static. No, everything feels moving and expressive and dynamic, you know, and it's, I mean, it's a madhouse. What else are you going to expect from one of the best production companies out there? That's been around for years.
Yeah, I think it really harkens back to like just the opening of the film. You have this like really big surrealism dreamlike sequence, and then you transition into the opening credits. That's just a heck of a way to open a movie, and it kind of just sucks you in right then and there.
Yep. And so there's just a lot of great stuff to talk about this movie, and a lot of weird stuff to talk about too. And we're gonna talk it all. So jump into the dream world of Paprika, as we cover it here at the Amateur Talk Podcast. If you've never seen this movie before, just know that it's available out there. You can watch it. You're probably going to have to rent it or purchase it. It's available on the States and Amazon Prime, Google Play, among other platforms like Vudu that you can probably buy it. Isaac, is there any particular storefront? Did you buy it physical from Science Fiction Buchanan, or did you buy it from somewhere else?
Well, you can buy it here on from Google Play as well, but about it physical from Science Fiction Buchanan, yes.
Okay, so pretty much it's like available everywhere, probably in the mainstreamers. You would just have to buy it. But the cool thing is, I think the movie's old enough that you can rent it for like $3 or $4. Like it's very inexpensive to rent or purchase. I think the purchase option, when I saw it, was like between $9 or $12. Which this movie's totally worth it because it's an anime classic. So
it was definitely worth my $3.99.
Yes. $3.99 in 48 hours of amazingness. Mm-hmm. It's so funny how they tell you, you got 45 minutes to finish this movie. 45 hours to finish this movie. And you're like, the movie's 90 minutes. I'm not, why are you telling me I got 40? Like, what's going to happen in 48 hours? But then again, I think I just explained the plot of a movie. Like the plot of the movie is the guy trying to watch a movie within 48 hours and he can't do it. That sounds like a Gintama episode. Like it's just going to just be horrible.
That sounds like a Gintama arc.
38 episodes plus 5 fillers on a guy trying to watch a movie he rented. And it goes beyond the rental period of 48 hours.
You joke, but that did happen to me once.
No. With what movie?
I'm trying to it was probably like Batman The Long Halloween. It was recently where it's like I rented it and I started it, but I couldn't finish it. So I had to keep going back to it, starting it over, going back to it. And then it was just like, you have 90 minutes left. And I had
and like no.
I'm like, oh, crap. Thankfully, it didn't cut off in the middle of me playing the movie. It allowed me to finish it. So I made it just in time.
Nice. Nice.
Brandon, have you read or seen anything from Gintama?
I have really not. But I know enough of it, and I think we've referenced it enough in the show. Everything's a reference. I think we've referenced it enough in the show that I kind of understand what it's all about. So,
You really don't. You really don't if you haven't.
Thank you for just blasting me in the middle of the world.
Imagine Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy if the author was on crack and had some babies with Looney Tunes.
I just heard crack, and I think that gave me all the information I need.
I lost the thread. I don't understand.
I think that's the point. So back to Paprika.
Another thing I don't understand.
Exactly, yes. Today is a day of things we don't understand. No coffee or cheese or chocolate can help us. Why am I talking about food? I have no idea. It's too early for all this. But before we jump into the movie, I want to talk about the time that it came out. Like, I did not know this, but I was like kind of looking into it. And so Paprika is based on a novel. And this novel came out in 1991. And it came out like throughout different issues, like on a like in like a high-end magazine or whatever back in Japan. And then it was made into a manga in 1995. But the manga wasn't published till like 2003. So it's like, and I think it has to do with how crazy it is, especially the time of the year they came out. And it's funny because this is the time, this is around the time that, think about it, Blade Runner. You got Blade Runner, you got Akira, like the time where these crazy sci-fi things came out. You know what I mean? It's around that 1980, 1990 kind of like decade where a lot of great science fiction work, like Dark City and all that stuff came out.
Yeah.
I think Dark City was in like 1999 or something. Because Matrix was what, 94? Was that the original Matrix? No, it's not that old. Or it's like 2004 or something.
Yeah, I think it was like 99.
Yeah, so like those first, like where sci-fi was like big, this movie came out. And of course, I think one of the biggest things is that great, there's always like when Inception came out, right? Everybody thought it was like this groundbreaking thing, right? Of course, Christopher Nolan is making a name of himself. He takes a break from making Batman and he makes this film, which is like completely nuts. Mm-hmm. But then you find out that it was inspired by anime or it was inspired by a Japanese story. And like you have stories like the girl who traveled, the girl who lived through time and stuff like that. And it's all from like Japanese stories and anime. And I like the fact that I can see all the threads or the ideas or the concepts that Paprika works with that other great authors found value in and expanded upon in their own way. So I like how I think now that I've watched it, because I have never seen Paprika before, I kind of dig it. I kind of like Paprika more because I can see where Christopher Nolan saw it and went like, this is interesting. You see what I'm saying? And then made it his own way. And I think that's one of the best things about art in general. Like there, a lot of people complain or make the wrong move when criticizing or reviewing a work and say, this work is derivative. Or it's like, no, it's not about the work being derivative. It's that the best art doesn't ignore what was before, but builds upon it and expands upon it or gives it its own spin. You know what I mean? And I like that on Paprika, I can see all those little bits of it. And I don't know. It gives me a lot more appreciation for it as I was watching it.
I mean, there is an entire scene that's pretty much shot by shot recreated from Paprika in Inception. So
you mean the hallway hotel scene?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. You're right. I didn't think about that. Did you catch that, Mike?
That is one of the first things in my notes. It's like, oh my God, I'm watching a Christopher Nolan anime.
Yo, I didn't think about that.
It's so like, it's a recreation pretty much in Inception. And that's just wild. I had to check the date on Paprika to make sure this wasn't after Inception.
No. Well, that's the thing, though. Now when you know, when the novel came out.
Yeah, I didn't even know about the novel until you mentioned it.
Yeah, I was just pulling stuff up and I was like, and that's the thing, though. Like, Satoshi Kon, he was known for doing crazy psychological thrillers. Like, that was like, he has this miniseries, which I want to watch, called Paranoia Agent. He has Perfect Blue, which is like nuts. I don't know if you've seen it. But Perfect Blue is like, it's a psychological thrill, but it's not sci-fi. It really has to do with mental health and stress and like what fame does to you, or like when you feel you're being stalked or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's super crazy. And then this one is hands down a sci-fi psychological thriller about dreams and invading dreams and stuff like that. Like, it's funny that you say that about the hallway hotel scene, because I didn't think about it. But the one thing, and we'll talk in more detail about the movie now, because this, guys, this is going to be a somewhat spoiler review to a degree, because it is a movie from 2006. So I think it wouldn't be fair to us and to you guys for us not to talk about it freely, because it's been around. You know, so like, I want to say this right now. If you guys have never seen Paprika and do not want to be spoiled, you may want to jump out, go watch it, and come back just in case. But 100%. I'm free to say, and I think my cohorts will agree that it's an older movie. If you haven't seen it, don't be afraid. I'm sorry if we spoil it, but I recommend go back. We've told you where you can go rent it, watch it, come back and enjoy and mention in the comments. But spoilers, just in case. Did I say spoilers? Isaac, did you say spoilers?
No, but spoilers, I suppose.
Mike, spoiler alert.
See, I want a verbal consent.
yeah, like, there's no way to really talk about this movie without spoilers. Because it's just so insane. I don't think we can convey our thoughts without spoiling it. So, and honestly, I watched this movie blind. I had no idea what it was about. I think it's best if you go into it blind. So if you haven't watched Paprika, we recommend it. Go check it out.
Yeah,
it's more than just a vegetable that you can use for cooking food. Let's just say that.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is officially Isaac's 2 cents on Paprika. It's all about food. It's all connected. but yeah, guys, spoilers. There's no way of talking about this film without spoiling or being free about it. So you've been warned. Before we jump in, it's funny because you guys say the hallway scene is all Inception, but it's funny because I never caught that. But what to me felt Inception for me. It's the whole thing about starting in one place and freely going to another, and being able to switch destinations, let's call it the Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart effect, like being able to just that's based on Paprika too, being able to switch. Smoothly transition between locations and moments and all that stuff. To me, that's what felt the most Inception of, especially when you go into the point of Inception towards the end of the movie, where you're going into a dream within a dream within a dream.
Because when reality starts to bleed into each other.
Exactly. And that's kind of what happens in the first moment that I felt that, apart from the beginning. Because it's funny, because in the beginning I didn't really feel that way, because it's the beginning, so you don't know what's going on. But then when you go into Himuro's apartment, that she's in his room, and suddenly she finds a stairway to a different place down there. So she goes down the stairs and ends up in a different place. She goes through a door, she goes to a different place. And as soon as she's going to jump over the gate or whatever to the stairway where the doll is, she was about to fall down. So it's that seamless transition between multiple realities or multiple areas that to me was like, oh my God, this is like crazy. Because as she went deeper, I don't know if it makes sense, but as she went deeper, each transition, or at least the transition, became longer. You know what I mean? Like how as you go deeper into the dreams, time is slower.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that idea. And I think that's so cool. But yeah, Paprika's crazy. Mike, if you were to... So you watched it for the first time just like I did.
Yeah.
What are your general thoughts? And then we'll talk in detail about stuff.
So, like you, my general thoughts initially was, what the heck is happening? Because I was very confused, and I think a lot of it, and this is something that I need to kind of work through with anime, is that I'm watching with subtitles. but the visuals are so gorgeous. I'm pausing and rewinding to try and make sure I experience the entire thing in full.
Yeah.
So Paprika, much like a Nolan movie, we need to watch more than once, and I wish I could have watched it a second time before recording this. But my general thoughts on this one is the point of Paprika, I feel, is the what it means to dream and everything that comes with that, you know. Different characters have different dreams, and it all kind of snowballs towards the end when everything starts bleeding together. Dr. Chiba, for example, uses dreams as escapism. She becomes Paprika. And I think that is kind of dangerous because she's basically living two lives and she's losing touch with reality. Whereas the chairman, we find out, who's like the bad guy of the film, he's getting lost in his dreams. The detective, Konakoa, is having nightmares and he's running away from his dreams. I just think it's really interesting how it's tackling different aspects, but the end of the movie is still saying it's okay to dream, you know? Kind of like in Inception, where the lines start to blur. I just think Paprika has a lot to say about the dream world and what it means to live in reality and what it means to like harken back to those dreams, whether it's being a dream of the past, a dream of the future, reconciling the difference between dreams and reality. Also the way it uses surrealism to like convey the absurdity of the dream world. This movie is weird. And I think that it using surrealism is genius because dreams are inherently silly, right? Like you dream, you can have a mundane dream, but all of a sudden you open a door and it just leads you to a different place. Like you said, that hallway scene, or when she goes down into the basement of the apartment building. So I think the way it handles surrealism, it's not just an excuse to have insanely well-animated visuals, but it also enhances the story of dreams and reality. I don't know, man. It's just a lot to unpack, and I'm still kind of processing it. And I think that's what I love most about it, is that initially I was confused, but the more I thought about it, the more I kind of fell in love with it.
Isaac, what are your general thoughts of Paprika?
Well, unlike you guys, I have watched that movie before. I think two times before, I think. And my general thoughts when I saw it for the first time was pretty much the same as you guys. And as someone that have watched it earlier, I have to say that it's a movie that becomes better for each setting, so to speak. Because you know, you talked about, Mike, you notice the smaller details that you might not have found at first glance when during your first sitting.
It's why you need to watch Tenet five times.
That's
and debatable. Backwards.
But it's a movie that I can definitely say is a prime example of it's getting gets better for each viewing for it.
Yes, and it's I can see that.
It's also a movie that doesn't really hold your hand, like. They just never explain how Paprika works. Like, why is Dr. Chiba's subconscious basically split into two people? You know? It's just never really explained. You just gotta go with it.
That's part of the dreamlike scenario in my book. It wouldn't have a fit with the same effect of crossing dreams with reality. If you had explained how this machine would have worked,
I guess my thing is, at the start of the movie, they are clearly two different people. And by the end of the movie, they're both what we think might be the real world. They're both present there. I just think it's really interesting how they don't explain any of it. You just got to roll with it. you know.
But but funny thing is, I think that's that's kind of the point, because because the idea, I think, from the beginning, it's the fact that you can't really explain dreams. Dreams are up to interpretation, period. So the movie's up to interpretation, like a dream. It's up. It's supposed to be up in the air, and it's supposed to be subjective, not objective. And I think that that is part of the movie's charm, that you're supposed to walk away with it, what you think you're walking away with. It's not pushing an agenda or a particular idea. And that's, I think that's why it works. That's why the madness works, because it's not trying to push a very specific theme. It's just exploring something in a particular way. And just like, for example, you guys saw the hallway scene and screamed Inception. I saw a different thing and it screamed Inception to me. And it's just going to do that because everybody's just going to react to it differently. And it's interesting how you mentioned about how Paprika is cheap, Dr. Sheba escaping into using dreams as escapism to a degree. Mm. And I think it's interesting because I see it differently. I don't see it as escapism. I see it more as the idea that in dreams, in one way, shape, or form, you're untethered from the shackles of reality. And what I mean by that is, in reality, you have to wear the mask of what you're supposed to be among other people. You have to be kind. You have to be polite. You have to be professional. Or you have to not let people know your darkest secret. You know what I mean? Like, in reality, you have to wear all these masks or be tethered by all these rules that when you enter the dreamlike state, your subconscious literally just runs wild and it manifests your real true self, or at least what the true self that you are, or the true self that you're running away from. Because when you look at Paprika, Dr. Sheba was working with Tokita, which Tokita is the creator of the DC Mini, right? Mm-hmm. So she's working with Tokita to treat patients that are mentally ill using psychotherapy machines, whether it's a DC Mini, which is the new machine that they've created, which, by the way, we know nothing about. We just know what it looks like, which is part of the non-exposition kind of thing, which is awesome.
Yeah, you get it, right?
Exactly. And the funny thing is that you know nothing about the technology behind all this, but you don't care because they don't make it the point. Like, the movie doesn't make it a point for you to understand it. The movie just says, just strap in, go for a ride, and then think about it later. And I think it's great. which I find kind of interesting with the fact that the movie ends with a guy buying a movie ticket. And that's pretty magical.
To a like, movie that was supposed to be released by director Khan, which I think
is. And by the way, in that particular scene at the end, when he's at the movie theater, one of the movie posters is the movie poster for Perfect Blue.
Yep.
So yeah, there it is. But yeah, it's the whole thing about, so being released in reality, I would say. So she's working with Tokita. So her job is to help patients. And Paprika is the way she helps them. Because remember, we're supposed to kind of deduce that the cop is one of the patients.
Yep.
Because of the nightmares that she's having. So whenever she goes into therapy with the patients, she assumes the role of Paprika. So she's actually, so Paprika is not necessarily a different version, is how she takes care of patients, which is very interesting.
The reason I feel it's escapism to a certain degree, because I agree with everything you said, but there's a little bit of a character. It's not like they're the exact same person. When she goes to the dream world, when she becomes Paprika, she's less reserved. She's more free.
Yes.
And yes. I think that's why, like, we even see towards the end of the film when the two of them are working together, they're clashing because they do have different ideals, honestly.
Yes.
Doesn't mean one is better than the other, but I like there's literally a part where Paprika.
There's a dichotomy there where they're like at odds.
Right.
With the way they're, and you know what? And it's interesting you say that, because because it makes me think also about the fact that because they're both confined to the different rules of each dimension. And they feel that they have to confine within those rules, which is why it's kind of perfect that it's not Paprika that saves the day. It's Dr. Chiba.
Exactly. So, like, there's this scene where Paprika is literally depicted as a butterfly, which embodies freedom and rebirth, right, and beauty.
Yeah.
But we later see, maybe not entirely her own doing, but Dr. Chiba is pulled out of her Paprika shell,
yeah,
which, again, signifies rebirth. And I think that just shows that towards the end of the film, Paprika and Chiba are becoming one and the same.
Right. Like, she's understanding that the Paprika is just part of who she is.
Right.
Like, it's part of her desire. Like, just like it's part of her desire to be free. Which, by the way, I'm also going to mention, is since we're going to talk symbolism, because why not? So you mentioned the butterfly. And you know what I'm thinking about, which is crazy? So you notice that there's a scene where Paprika kind of dons the dress of the Monkey King. You know, when she's like in the flying nimbus.
Yeah.
And like, I think the Monkey King is like a picture of like immortality. Like he's one of those immortal beings or whatever. He's like a god or whatever. And it makes me think about the idea that you're eternal in your dreams. Like you there's no like age. You know what I mean? Like there's like you're like a Paprika never changes forms. She's always gonna be the same person or the same. She's gonna look the same. But whatever looks in reality is there's an age attached to it as opposed to Paprika, which is just the same always. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, there's a lot to unpack. Like and I think what makes this, I think this is one of those few movies that use nonsensical moments and uses madness to pull us into its flow. You know how some movies do crazy things, but you have no idea. You never know what's going on. And it's just like aimless.
Yeah.
This movie uses a madness to control its flow and pull you in. And I think in that way, it reminds me a lot of Fooly Cooly. Which Fooly Cooly, yeah. And because a lot of people, of course, and I think that Fooly Cooly is one of those, one of the most what's the word I'm looking for?
Like misunderstood or?
Misunderstood, yeah, but it's not
underrated, you know.
Underrated. It's one of the most underrated and most understood, most misunderstood animes out there because everybody doesn't go beyond the layer of madness. When in reality, and I think I mentioned it when we covered it, when Isaac and I did it, and I know you're starting to go through it, Mike, which is why it's awesome that I'm able
to mention episodes here. Left.
On the first season or in general?
On the first season.
Okay. So it's like it's a study of adolescence. It's not just a crazy ride. It's all about exploring a kid's journey into maturity. And it does it in so many serious tones, but it's all hidden within the madness. So if you're not able to go beyond that layer, you're not going to miss it. You're just going to see the old man that wants to sleep with the young girl, and you're all, you know what I mean? Like all you're going to see is like the crazy stuff, the mixture in animation. All you're going to see is the kid getting knocked his head off every single time. You know what I mean? Like you're not going to look beyond that. And this movie doesn't like wears the madness on its sleeve and just pulls you through. But as you go along for the ride, if you allow yourself, you start seeing all the smart stuff. There's a lot of smart dialogue, a lot of smart introspective stuff, and a lot of introspective exploration of dreams and reality and stuff like that, which is actually pretty awesome.
Yeah, but that's why I was saying like earlier, the way it uses surrealism to convey the dream scenarios, right? Because dreams are weird. We've all had weird dreams. And so like Paprika basically looking like Son Goku as she flies down through the city. It's like, that's something that would happen in a dream. And so it's not just being random, but it makes sense. And I love how it's just kind of woven into the narrative of the story. Yeah. And that's what makes it awesome. Yeah. And yeah, it definitely has the Fooly Cooly elements of... Fooly Cooly is an experience, man. Like, I've been doing reactions to it over the summer. And first two episodes, I was confused, but it's like, I get it. It's you're kind of looking for the artistry and the beauty and the chaos that's happening. And once you start to piece it together, it's really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So Isaac, do you have any particular thoughts about how it handles dreams or whatever? Do you have any particular thoughts on how Inception inspired it? Or do you have any particular thoughts in general, apart from whether you like it or not? Do you have any particular thoughts? What does Paprika make you think about? Or does it not make you think? Does it make you just go crazy? I mean, you are the mad doctor, so what does it do?
I mean, it makes me even more mad, but in all seriousness, I don't really know what to convey more than what you guys think. If anything, this has been an interesting recording for me, considering I have already watched it, unlike you guys, and just listening to you when I'm waiting to some way that I can chime in.
Yeah. So it was an interesting first watch, because Isaac suggested we cover it, and I just didn't look into it. I'm like, I'm just going to watch it blind. And Paprika is everything I love about movies, honestly. And that's why I try to avoid movie trailers now, because going in blind, not knowing what I was getting. Because remember, I was under the guise that this was supposed to be a Halloween movie.
Damn it, Isaac.
Which,
I mean, you can argue that it could work, considering how it's how it works with a psychological mind, but...
I think whatever. I think our Halloween in the States, Mike, is kind of like bloodier, so we expect blood on Halloween. How do you? I don't know how Halloween works in Sweden. Is it like Paprika?
No, not really.
I mean, that parade was kind of scary at first, so I do see that.
Yes.
But you know, I had a certain expectation, and that's not what I got. But I'm not upset either that it wasn't like a horror movie. I just kind of embraced what was happening.
Yes.
And again, that's what I love about movies. That's what I love about Nolan movies. Like, we joke over at the Mike and John podcast about Christopher Nolan being why we love cinema. But it's just like, again, the absurdity that's happening has a purpose. And we all have interpreted it differently. Neither of us are wrong. But I just think it's really interesting, like you were saying before, Brandon, on how art is subjective. And when you get something really weird, like Paprika, but you can still see the beauty and artistry that was put into the animation, into the score and soundtrack, like, it's just incredible. It's everything I love about movies, and I can't wait to watch this one again one day.
So, interesting. I one of the things that I like about the film is it's kind of argument, even though it was by the end of the movie you find out that it was all hypocritical, but the argument of technology being the fall of mankind, or the end of freedom, or the end of being able to produce a healthy society, And how the idea of being able to explore or control or manipulate the subconscious is like the death of life as we know it. You know, like all the arguments that Sherman was making throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like an interesting argument, which is kind of like the argument of all great science fiction. Like, there's going to be a point where technological advances are going to be the end of civilization. In one way, shape, or another, whether it is because we create AI and we all end up in pods like the Matrix, or the idea that we come to understand so much of ourselves that we end up ending ourselves, which is kind of like what they were trying to say, I think, with the whole thing with dreams, like we're not meant to understand everything, or the idea that it's territory that is not meant to be explored, because it would just freak everybody out. Because you know the whole thing about the parade, right? I have a very stupid theory, but like the parade and the parade that we see with all the different things going on at the same time, it's like if you melded every single dream or subconscious together in the world, it will look like that. It will make no sense. It will be indecipherable because everybody dreams and thinks differently. And I think it's that river of thought and subconscious that the parade is trying to symbolize.
It also can symbolize, you know, all of these dreams were merging together and they were becoming uniform in that parade.
Yes.
And you can even see throughout.
So it's like the loss of identity.
Right.
Or individuality. Yes.
Exactly. Which is, on one hand, that could have been, like we find out, it's the chairman that's really leading that parade. And him wanting to,
which is what he wants to make everyone, put everyone under his control.
Right. And it's like, the more you lose your individuality, nothing matters anymore, essentially. You are all walking that same straight line to that annoyingly catchy soundtrack.
Yes. and it's like, but then again, now I'm going to take this another level. What does marketing do? It feeds the subconscious. And it tries to take the whole, like, good marketing, like, and yeah, I'm going into tinfoil hats, people.
Paprika, good, we totally understand.
Exactly. We know what's going on, damn it. Like, good marketing, what does it do? It kind of grabs your subconscious of what you think you want, what you think you need. And then you find out, and when you wake up, you're buying that thing that they're trying to push. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's kind of that idea. And it's funny because the chairman was talking about how technology is the end. But then again, he also talks about, you know, like every time he talks to the director of the department or whatever, he talks about responsibility, about not being negligent, about being able to shepherd hope or whatever. And when you find out at the end, he was saying all those things because he couldn't resist the power that it gave him, because he was the fallen angel. You know what I mean? Like, he knows what the right thing to do is, that he needs to shepherd people in the right path, but he fall prey to the idea of being able to be in power. And it's a mixture of him being in power and also him controlling him also protecting everybody, but it all became all about him. So he fell to the freedoms of his wicked dreams. And that was contaminating reality and all that stuff.
With
the parade, all that.
Yeah, but that's again, like I was saying before, of how all of the, it's telling us a lot of different things about how dreams work.
Yeah.
In this one movie. Yeah. Like, again,
yeah,
the chairman's dream of power consumes him to where he becomes this like dark lord that they have to take down.
He becomes everything that he says technology is going to become.
Right.
Like, he becomes everything he preaches against.
Yep. And then our detective Konakawa, he is dreaming or having nightmares of the case he's working, of the failure he did with his friend, you know, and that's why he doesn't watch movies, which again, I feel like movies is another theme of escapism.
Yep.
People watch movies to escape their own realities, much like how we're doing with dreams here. But on the flip side of that, the movie's not telling you that escapism is bad or that dreams are bad. It's
correct.
Just putting them in perspective, which is why I think, again, Dr. Chiba is the perfect example of letting go of the dream world just enough to realize the people she loves in her life, the job that she loves, trying to fix this mess that was created.
Yeah.
And we still end with them recommending movies because you can have that level of escapism. You can have aspirations and dreams of the future. You can even have nightmares and learn how to work through them, but you can't be consumed by them, which is what happened with the chairman.
And it's funny because you said that about the movies. And the funny thing is that Paprika loves movies. So she loves, so there's a part of Sheba that loves exploration. And that's the other thing that I find interesting too, is the idea of dreams as the gateway. Okay. and we've talked about it, I think, a lot, but I think we haven't specified it, is that dreams are the gateway to the subconscious, to the reality of who we are. So, like, whether it's the darkest part of ourselves, the Sherman, whether it is the truths of ourselves that we don't want to accept, Kanakawa, whether it is the truth of who we are in terms of who we really are, what we really love, in the case of Paprika and Shabby, like, dreams are that. That's why it's so funny how psychotherapy uses dreams, because it's all about unlocking truths about ourselves. And I think what we see throughout the movie, which is so interesting because it's so melded together, but what we see with the different characters, it's literally as if each character was a different patient whom we are exploring their dreams with. Yeah. And each of them are exploring different realities of themselves. With, of course, the Sherman being the darkest one, really revealing all the dark desires that he has. And here's the other thing. Because it's a dream, right? You gotta also venture the idea that if it's a dream, is not yet reality, which means that the Sherman had the opportunity, or you gotta assume that the Sherman had the opportunity to not give in to that dark side. So just because you dream about being, just like, for example, like when we, if anybody's seen Dexter, I don't know, Isaac, you know Dexter, the serial killer series from Showtime?
I know about it, but I haven't seen it.
Do you know the premise?
Yeah, I know.
So pretty much, for those that don't know, but I think Dexter's old enough, the people are. So Dexter is pretty much a serial killer that was literally raised by a cop that recognized that he had all these dark whatever, but he only kills criminals. So he has learned to siphon all that dark side. So all he does is serial killer. He kills killers, which is not right, but it's like he accepts this reality of himself and manages that way, right? So mm-hmm. it's like it's the fact that what you do with the information that you learn from those voyages into dreams is what becomes reality, as opposed to you just accepting dreams as reality, which is why I think that even though the movie continues to meld reality with dreams constantly, it's always up to the characters to decide what stays in reality. And they make it that a point. Like, each character decides what stays. That's why towards the end of the movie, Konakawa accepts what the dreams are telling him. And then he carries over mm-hmm. to his real life what he's going to do with his life now. Which is why we see him, quote unquote, rehabilitated or healed, buying a movie ticket.
Right.
Which is again another great piece of exploration that the movie does, which is why we also see the whole thing with Paprika and Shiba. Like you mentioned, the idea that Shiba is pulled out of Paprika's body, but not just first she is forced out, but then she grows herself, which is why she starts like a child and becomes this huge person or whatever, and that's her embracing who she is, both in reality and in dreams.
Which is awesome. Exactly. And a smaller detail is that Tokita, the other doctor, the one who invented the DC Mini.
Uh-huh.
I just want to point out that in the dream world, yeah, he kind of has a robotic body, but he's practically the same character. So he is like the only one in the story who is who he is, right? He is the same inside and out, which is why at the end of the story, you might think he didn't evolve or change, but he didn't need to, which I think really interesting.
Well, the funny thing also is, what is the main thing they say when they describe him? He's a child trapped in a man's body.
Yep.
And it's the idea that kids, I think children have the least amount of trouble navigating both realms.
And also, we can argue that the robot could be an substitute it for as a toy.
Yes. To some extent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or and the idea, and also not only that, that the idea of the robot that to me is very interesting. And I'm gonna throw you some ideas of what I think about Fooly Cooly. So you know Sean, you know Shanti is the name? What's the name of the TV robot?
Lord Conti.
Conti. Lord Conti. So one of the things that I spoke about in a review that, that I found very interesting is the idea that the reason Conti's head is a TV is because TV, all they do is they receive signals. So they don't think for themselves. So is the idea that Conti is the epitome of nurture and when it comes to children, because he acts as the information that he receives or that he learns from others. That's why it's a TV. That's why it's, yeah, it's all about control and super interesting. So the idea that you can see Tokita's face on the head of the robot, it makes me think that all that matters of Tokita's character is his mind and how his mind remains intact no matter the reality he inhabits. And it goes back, like you said, he didn't need to change. He was the same in the dream world as he was in reality. And that robot and his face being protected that way is the best way of showing that, because his mind is all that matters and the mind doesn't change. And as I was talking about kids, it's like also how dreams are the realm of imagination, which mm-hmm. kids freely travel through. There's so much stuff. It's so awesome.
Now, I have a question for you guys. Is it better than Inception?
Yes.
No, I think it's different. Because mm-hmm. the biggest thing that I'm glad you asked that question. I think it's the most valid question in the world right now. It's going to go on posters. So, hashtag is going to go on posters. So I don't think it's better. I think it's different. And I think I'm glad that it's different.
Yeah.
Because it's two different explorations of the same concept. Which is why I can have an appreciation of iRobot, but I love Blade Runner. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's the same concept explored different ways, but these two different ways of exploring dreams and dream navigation and dream interpretation are so wildly different. And I think this is why Christopher Nolan is amazing as a director and a writer, because he made something that can harken back to Paprika, but has no connection to it.
None whatsoever, honestly.
Right. So Inception is his own, which to me is why Inception is so good and why Christopher Nolan is such a great artist. But yeah, I think they're just different. I think they're just fantastic, each of them. And they all have different things. Personally, I wouldn't watch Paprika again for a while, but Inception or Paprika are two movies that I would go back to. But when I'm looking for different things, I'm glad that I have two films that I can go to talk about dreams.
Yeah. It's like we were saying earlier about art being subjective. Mm-hmm. I love how you can see inspiration, but then a director can take it a completely different way. Because I'm sure even Paprika is different from the novels and books it was based on.
Probably.
Which we haven't read it, but one can assume that it's not mm-hmm. a direct one-to-one adaptation. Correct. And so that's what I love. That's why, again, it's everything I love about movies. It's everything I love about storytelling, is that you can have a concept and an idea, and then you can take it in a million different directions, a million different ways. Like the concept of dreams. We have two amazing movies with the same idea, but they are totally different. And you right. can see hints of Paprika in Inception, but if you play them back to back, they're totally different experiences. And yeah, like you said, it's just amazing to have these two movies that you can see inspiration, but the creatives behind them both created something beautiful that are totally different.
And you know what? Another thing, piggybacking on what you said about having two different experiences, That's how you know it. And here's the crazy thing. And this might sound like a heresy, but I think this is the most important part on the artist subjective argument, right? Inception works because it doesn't negate Paprika. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, Inception works because it doesn't say that Paprika is obsolete. It works because it adds to the dream conversation. Like, great art doesn't negate what came back. It just adds to the conversation. It adds to the dialogue. It adds to the exploration of ideas.
Yeah, and it's going to sound weird, but just follow me. It's one of the reasons that I don't really like the Disney live-action remakes mm-hmm. is because...
They don't add anything.
They yep. don't. Yeah, they don't add anything. Like, why would yep. you watch the live-act, the quote-unquote live-action Lion King when you can just watch the original Lion King, which is 1,000 times better and more expressive because it's 2D animation. It's not trying to look like real life.
Mm-hmm.
I would. That's why I think a lot of people prefer... like the Cinderella movie that came out in 2015, because it's not being the animated movie. It's doing its own thing, and it's adding to the Cinderella franchise in a way that the original didn't. Much like Paprika and Inception, or just Nolan movies in general and various anime, you can see they have similar concepts, but like even Tenet, right? Rewinding time, going forward in time, things that haven't happened yet. Those are ideas we've seen in other projects, but it's just wildly different because it's his interpretation. It's not just a remake of something else.
So I'm going to throw a curveball at you. I'm going to add to the conversation since we're just adding stuff. I have a hot take. I agree with you with the live action adaptations. The only new version that I think, and I'm saying new version loosely because they're older, but they're older but newer than the animated versions. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Is the Broadway shows? The Broadway shows add to that mythology, and the performances of the live action people dressed as the animals, for example, Lion King, revolutionized the story.
Yep.
You see what I'm saying? And like, for example, personally, I'm a huge fan of the Beauty and the Beast Broadway show. Never seen it, but the soundtrack is phenomenal. And it adds songs and texture and depth to a lot of the characters that the animated movie never did, because what the Broadway shows do is that they expand the appeal to a broader audience. And that adds to the conversation. As opposed to the live action movie that is just trying to meh.
So, yeah, I wrote this article a few years back called Why the Lion King Sucks, and that's exactly my point. The Lion King is my second favorite Broadway production of all time. The Broadway version nice. Of Lion King is better than the animated movie Lion King. I'm just going to be real. Because
no, but see, you're able to say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it takes the epic story from The Lion King and enhances it and adds more to it, adds more to the lore of the story. And I wish Disney would have realized that. And like, there's like, Nala has 2 songs in the Broadway production that are really powerful. And you cast Beyonce to play Nala in Lion King, and you don't give her those songs. Why wouldn't you take advantage of those Broadway songs to enhance that story and make it something new and something different? And that's why it's very frustrating, because I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast. I haven't listened to the Broadway album. But from what you're saying, it sounds like it's kind of the same situation.
Yeah.
It's still Beauty and the Beast. It's still The Lion King, but it takes it in another direction. And I mm-hmm. think it would have been better to bring that version to life instead of
right.
just recreating the animated one.
And you know, it's funny that also, since we're talking about Broadway shows, one of the things that Broadway shows have to their advantage that most animated films have is that Broadway shows, because of the setting, because it's an event to go to a Broadway show, time is not a factor.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the hour and a half, you have the intermission, you have the other hour and a half. It becomes like an experience. Like when you go to a Broadway show, you're spending your day at the theater. You see what I'm saying? So if you know you're going to watch a show, you know you're going to spend 3 to 3.5 hours in that theater. You know what I mean? You're not thinking of, oh, this movie's an hour and a half or whatever. You know what I'm saying? Like if you're going to Broadway, you're going to Broadway. You see what I'm saying? Right. So it's untethered, which is why I think they allow themselves that time to just explore the characters more in depth, which is why a lot of these shows work. But yeah, art, it's awesome.
To pivot that back to Paprika's opening is the same way, to where it's absurd and insane, but it kind of welcomes you in. Yes. To that reality, yes. Within like yes. the first 5 minutes of the movie,
and it's just and you know what? And you know what's crazy? These are the kind of things that make Satoshi a fantastic. That made Satoshi, the late great and amazing Satoshi Kon, an amazing director. The fact that we're able to, how he turns locations in the film as familiar locations and makes them anchor points so that you know where. So he uses them as anchor points for you to rest throughout the madness of the film. Mm-hmm. For example, you visit the circus more than once. You visit the bar more than once. You visit the hallway more than once. It kind of creates a rest for the mind, because as the madness continues to go worse, like I like how the parade is always the same, but only one thing changes, and how that I think that kind of helps, you know what I mean, as opposed to using different imagery. And I think that's a very interesting direction. I would assume is a director's take. I don't know if the book's the same or whatever. But those are the kind of things that make sense to me as an artist. Because instead of reintroducing brand new imagery, he's very careful in what he's introducing as not to overload us with information. Because that's the biggest thing about this movie that I think is phenomenal. And I think the last thing I want to say about it is the fact that so much happens in this movie, but you don't necessarily feel that it's overloading you with information.
Right.
Which is amazing and very hard to do, which is another thing that makes Christopher Nolan a great director. You kind of know he's going to overload you with information, but he has taught us because of how long his movies are and how he's like his filmography has prepped us for that informational drop whenever we go see one of his films. Right. We have been trained by Nolan, our overlord. No.
No, but like you were talking about how he uses locations and in Paprika. I just want to like throw this back at you guys. The movie theater, for example, is another location. It's very calming, which again is kind of the point. Yes. Movies are our escape. It's our break from the madness. Yeah. But there's a point where Konakoa has to embrace the madness that's happening.
Yes.
And so he has to force his way into the screen, into the dream world, which I just thought was a really interesting touch on how he had to basically break reality to go and save Dr. Shiba.
Do you find it interesting when he's... the first time he's at the movie theater with Paprika and they're having a conversation, did you notice that was one of those quietest scenes in the movie?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Until the parade burst in, which is interesting because it makes you think how dreams can be introspective, but sometimes reality will just come and hit you in the face.
Yep.
I don't know, guys. That's all I got. You guys got anything else you want to add?
No, it's just been an interesting conversation that I'm just wonder when I'm going to jump in, but you basically pointed out some of the best points you can make about this movie in my book.
Isaac, you know Brandon and I talk way too much. You need to just jump in like, next time.
Dude, you know that I can talk if I so want. But the...
So, well, guys, that is the Amateur Otaku's take on Paprika, the 2006 movie directed by Satoshi Kon, produced by Madhouse. It's a great film. If you love escapism, if you love dreams, if you like Christopher Nolan, if you love anime, go watch Paprika. It's amazing. It's available for rent, Amazon Prime, Google Play, pretty much worldwide, at least in Google Play. It's a great film. You got to watch it. And if you watch it, let us know what you thought. And let us know if we're crazy, if we're nuts. But then again, art is subjective. So we can think what we want. You can think what you want. And it will all be valid because everything is valid in dreams. All right. See what I did there? That's amazing. So, guys, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button, to hit that like button on YouTube, to click the bell for notifications so you don't miss any episodes of the Amateur Talker Podcast. We got great stuff coming up. Isaac, Leo, and Mike just finished covering My Hero Academia Season 5. They did an amazing closing episode. I heard it. It was awesome. And they're still covering the My Hero manga. And if I'm not mistaken, guys, you guys are going to start covering the spinoff, Vigilantes, right?
Yeah. By the time you guys are listening to this, we probably have an episode or two of Vigilantes up. Nice. We haven't recorded those yet, so we can't give you much details on those conversations, but you can always check them out here on the channel. It's a fun time because Vigilantes is a little different than My Hero Academia.
Nice.
I'm still surprised that I haven't done an anime spinoff of it, if I'm being totally honest.
I wouldn't be surprised if they're waiting for My Hero to end or getting close to end to then do the spinoff. Because similar to Fear the Walking Dead, even though The Walking Dead never ended, I mean, you know, strike while the iron is hot, you know what I mean? But thank you guys for joining us. Have it awesome, guys. Before we go, my name is Brandon, the Scarlet Fan. You can find me on Twitter at thescarletfan52. Mr. Thomas, where can they find you, brother?
You can find me at Novice Cinephile on Twitter and YouTube, the Novice Cinephile on Instagram. On YouTube, I'm covering Foodie Cootie. I have a few more reviews coming up there as well, if you guys want to check those out. Also writing for Collider.com, so just stay tuned there. For any of my written work, as well as with BAMEntertainment.com, because the podcasts go up there, and I might have a couple articles going up there as well.
Isaac?
Well, you can find me over at Emblemaniac on Twitter, and you can find my work over at Woba Entertainment, and you can find the pod over at the Amateur Taco Pod on Twitter.
You know what's crazy? I'm pretty confident that Isaac has never seen vaudeville, and then he talks like a vaudeville radio artist. That is crazy.
Jeez.
Well, guys, have it awesome. We'll see you next time. Peace.
Peace.
Hey.